I'd like to welcome everyone tonight, especially Irma and Lola. It's so nice to have you with us. And since Friday is Armistice Day, I would like to ask Jean Hall if she would read In Flanders Fields.
In Flanders Fields the poppies blow, between the crosses, row on row, that mark our place and in the sky, the larks still bravely sing and fly, scarce heard amid the guns below. We are the dead, short days ago, we live, felt dawn, saw sunset glow, loved and were loved, and now we lie in Flanders Fields. Take up our quarrel with the foe, to you from failing hands we throw, the torch be yours to hold it high, and if ye break faith with us who die, we shall not sleep. The poppies grow in Flanders Fields.
Thank you, Jean. Now we'll have a minute's silence. Pleased to have with us tonight Lauren and Irma, who have very kindly consented to come and tell us of the Bradley history. I don't think Lauren needs any introduction. We all know him as our local storekeeper and bus driver and the guy that sat behind me in school. And Irma, we all know her. And for anybody that doesn't know Irma, she's Lauren's aunt. So Lauren, I'll turn it over to you.
Can I sit down or do I stand up?
Maybe.
Okay. Whatever you make fair. I'm going to sit in the back of the jacket. Is it okay, Helen?
Yes, it's right.
Vernon said she was glad to have us with her, but I think I'm glad to have you guys with us. We're almost home. I'm not a very good speech artist. So I've got a few things written out here that Joyce and I sort of put together over the last couple of weeks. And I'll read some of them, and as we go along, like we'll do a little bit of ad-libbing as we do. I haven't got it all printed out for you, but my secretary just might do that someday. When Verna asked me to present the family history, I was honored and pleased to do so. But I told her then that I would only do so if Irma would cooperate, she being the last surviving member of the original JT family. It's hard to imagine a world without TV, video, radios, telephones, but in 1898, the social hub was the country store, complete with a pot-bellied stove, gas lights, coal oil lamps, and the spittoon. You can almost hear that, you know? How did J.T. Bradley and Sons originate and become a reality in the small village of Navan? Maybe because he was Irish. Irma will give the family background of JT's family, and I'll attempt to pick it up whenever she's finished. Irma, it's yours.
Are you going to get off your chair?
No, I'm not. Here. But it's a better light here.
I must be getting old. I get an awful time getting in and out of a chair.
Yes.
I'm going to
be old. And attack me.
Well, I'm going to read this, but and then after I have some lovely pictures of dad, mother, and etc. to show after, but I won't be interrupt what I have to say by showing them while I go along. So I must say, like Lauren, too, that to begin with, I want to say how highly honored I feel to be asked to give the life history of my Bradley family, of which I am proud to be one. I didn't have a chance to have any other, anyway. First, I would like to show you a picture of my dad's immediate family, but I want to show these pictures after my dad's immediate family, of which there are 11 showing, along with his parents. 3 are missing from the picture due to death at an early age, and as well as having the 14, they had adopted one girl. Dad was born in Blackburn on January the 11th, 1869. And then I'll show you the picture of the homestead, too, after. After his school days were over in Blackburn, that's age 17, he was employed in a grocery store in Ottawa for 12 years. He met Florence Smith in Ottawa, our mother, who was born in South March. Her home there was the Klondike Inn, which I think still stands on the corner there, and they were married on the 24th of May, 1894. And I have some lovely wedding pictures to show of Mother and Dad. At the age of 29, they moved to Navan with 2 young children and opened up a store on October the 19th, 1898, in the location where Herb Deeby now lives. But they lived in a small house down the road across from the school. At mealtime, they took turns in minding the store. Now, the oldest child they came to Navan with was Beatrice, was our oldest sister. She was the older of the 2 children when they settled in Navan. She was born on the 23rd of February, 1895, in Ottawa, attended school in Navan, and worked in the store until her marriage on February the 23rd, 1921, which was her birthday, to Gordon Hall. After their marriage, they moved to Saskatchewan. Beatrice died on December 22nd, 1968, in Ottawa. Then the other baby that came to Navan with them was Cecil, the second child. When Dad and Mother moved to Navan, was born in Ottawa, September the 5th, 1897. He attended school in Navan, went overseas in the First World War, and when he returned from overseas in 1918, I have a nice picture to show you of that too, in 1918, he entered the civil service and his whole career was in with the government work. He retired in 1964. His main hobby and recreation was curling and bowling, for which he won many prizes. Cecil married Irene Wilson on December the 23rd, 1920. And he died in 1972 at the age of 75. In 1900, Mildred was born. She was the first one born in Navan on June the 24th. After that, it was necessary to have a bigger house, so Dad had a store and house combined, built, situated across the street from their original location. Mildred was educated in Navan, went to Teachers College in Ottawa, and was hired to teach school in Cumberland, where she taught until her marriage to Norman Reed in September 1923. Mildred died in 1976 in her 76th year, but she was out with her daughter, Maureen. In 1903, Morris was born in Navan on October the 1st. After his school days, he worked in the Royal Bank in Ottawa and in Navan, then returned to the business where he worked under Dad. He married our own Elda McGee on September the 14th, 1927. And I was a pupil of hers in high school. Yeah. And, she used to keep me in after school and everything. I think it was because I looked so much like Morris, you know, she wanted to look. I said I looked like Morris, you know. So she used to keep me in after school. It was terrible. One time, I remember, Elda, Vera Rivings and I were talking, as usual, and she said, stay in for 15 minutes. So when the 15 minutes were up, we got up and walked the door. And as soon as I put my hand to go on the door, "And where are you ladies going?" "Well," I said, "you said 15 minutes." "Well," she said, "come back, I didn't tell you to go yet." "Oh, were we mad?" So anyway, we didn't talk for a few days, but we started all over again. Oh yeah, that's the way she was, because you see, she was going with Morris at the time. In 1906, Gordon was born on February the 3rd. He received his education in Navan, and immediately after finishing school, he commenced working at the Bradley store. It was then it became to be known as J.T. Bradley and Sons. Gordon married our little Lola Carscadden, and Gordon and Morris took over the operation of the store and the milk transportation branch of the business after the death of Dad in 1932. Gordon took over the management of the milk collections, and in 1932, after the sudden passing of Dad, Morris and Gordon continued keeping store until the second and larger buildings were burned to the ground on August the 28th, 1948. While a larger store was being rebuilt, Bradley's store managed to have business as usual on a smaller scale in the nearby garage. The new and larger establishment that had two apartments above opened for business on January the 29th, 1949. Gordon died in February 1951. Morris continued the store business as well as the milk transportation, which had been started in 1924, carrying milk cans and grew to two bulk milk transports. On September the 15th, 1973, the Bradley store celebrated their 75th anniversary of business with an open house party for all their friends and customers in the Navan Community Center, where some 700 turned up for the celebration. Morris died on August the 24th, 1975. Morris left a thriving country store business to be carried on by his two sons, Lorne and Ross, third generation, and now along with Lorne's son-in-law, Gordy, Bob, a fine young man, in my estimation. They also have the school bus transportation. Well, then lastly came another girl, Irma, that's me, on December the 10th, 1911. I will always remember my brother Morris, who always had such a sense of humor, telling the story of the Sunday night when I was born, and of how all the kids were sent off to the evening church service in St. Mary's Anglican because a baby was to be born. And when they got home, there I was. Of course, they all had to run up the stairs to see, and Morris always said that all he could see was a big baby who weighed about 10 pounds with long black hair and a big nose, which I still have. See? It's still black. But it's still a little bit gray. But I have a big nose. Anyway, that's what he always used to say. Anyway, Irma received her education in Navan schools, then of course in Cornwall Commercial College, and I stayed with my sister Mildred and her husband in 1930 and 31, and like my older brothers and sisters, had my turn working in and for the J.T. Bradley & Sons store until her marriage in June 1939 to Archie Hill. After her marriage, she worked in Murphy Gamble's department store, then on Spark Street in Ottawa, and in 1951, she and her husband Archie bought a general store in Hazeldene. While there, her husband and son died, and Irma and daughter Nancy returned to Ottawa, bought a home, coincidentally on the same street as when they left just 5 years previous. She became an employee of the government until her retirement in 1972 due to illness. After her days with the government, Irma became very active doing volunteer work, like delivering Meals on Wheels and in the Grace Hospital gift shop, where she still works. I guess that the selling is still in my blood. So when in September 1988, St. Mary's Anglican Church, Navan, celebrated their 90th anniversary, our Bradley family store could have celebrated its 90th anniversary of when Dad and Mother went to Navin and started business, October 1898 to now 1988, 90 years. Navin certainly has grown in those years, and being the last of the family of six living, I still miss my parents, my brothers, and my sisters. I remember after hearing Dad remark that he didn't know what he would have done without the help of Flo in the store, as they were known to call each other, Jack and Flo. Thank you. Now, I have some pictures to show. When do you want me to show them, Joyce? Do you want me to pass those? Oh, there you are.
I think let Lauren finish.
Let Lauren, and then I'll have some nice pictures to show of the everybody. Not everybody, but wedding pictures and stuff. Okay.
Where do you want to go from here, Vern?
You're doing fine. Continue on.
I think what I'd like to do is tell you my earliest recollections of the store operation. I can remember, Irma's got pictures here of the store before it burned. Some of the things that I can remember at the old store is the long counters that we used to have both sides of the store. High ceiling, tin roof. If anybody wants to see the exact same tin roof, you can go into Marlene Dagg's house up here, the same roof is on the ceiling there as well as in the store. We used to have, in the backs of these counters, in the backs of the long counters, we had big drawers that pulled out sugar, white sugar, brown sugar, flour, I think rice was in one of them. We had a number of bins at the back where you had, where the, we're talking about bulk foods, in the back, bulk foods really isn't very new. We can go back to where we had little bins, and we've got, still got a couple of them at the store. That we had in the wall behind the counters for spices and all that kind of stuff. They tell you today not to keep spices very long. These things were in bins for a long time. Like we did just as much good baking then as what's being done now. We had glass-covered showcases, one at either end of the counter that I can remember. And this is where Grandpa kept, or Dad kept, and Grandpa kept gum and chocolate bars and everything over a curved case. Actually, Elsie had a couple of them too. And somebody may have bought that. Did you buy it? No.
You thought of it.
I had it replaced
with something. We had barrels of molasses, and I can remember distinctly helping take these off the truck when I was younger. Went into the basement. People would buy. You bring in your own jug for molasses. You bring in your own jug for vinegar. We did have people that would buy molasses, buy an 8-gallon can. They bring in a milk pail and buy. One person that comes to mind that did this all the time was George Bradley, because they ate molasses with breakfast, potatoes, bacon and eggs. It didn't matter. That was standard fare.
They got their iron.
And right at the front door, there was a gum machine that took the big pennies. And if anything should have ever been saved from that fire, that's one of the things that should have come out, but it didn't. And oddly enough, last year when we were digging a hole to get rid of the frost heap at the side of the store, Reggie McNeil, and I don't know how he saw it, but while they were digging, he saw this thing down. And it was an old penny. I think it's a 19-8 or something like that. Large, one of the big pennies. And that's what this thing took. And it was dentine gum that it spit out. Yeah. In the back of the store, too, we also had inside the store, we had a coal oil pump. Now, can you imagine us getting away with a coal oil pump inside the store? So the smell was there all in there. There was leaf tobacco, kept in the basement, keep it moist. And this is one thing that I remember about my grandfather. I don't remember that much about it. That's this one thing I remember, him smoking his pipe, and he ground up his own, well, he braided this stuff too. And then he grind it up and smoke it in this, I think one of the pictures that Irma has here too, has him with a pipe in his face. Another recollection that I have of him also is, likely wasn't supposed to be doing this, but as all grandparents do, you'd feed a little bit of candy to your kids. And I got one of the pieces of hard candy, got it stuck to my mother, and the father just happened to be there and tore off up to up to Doc Irwin's, and he just stood me, I don't know, I guess shook the hell out of me, it didn't hurt. And then shoved his finger down my throat, and there was the candy in the top.
I remember that day.
I remember more about my grandmother, mainly, well, I guess I know why, because she lived quite a bit longer. And I can still see to this day my grandmother sitting at the kitchen door of the store, the store and the house were one right behind the other. She would sit at the kitchen, actually at the kitchen table, and she could see the front door of the store. And when the door opened, the bell rang, she was up and go right to the...
Are you old enough to remember that, Bernie?
Yes.
Another thing that she liked to do, too, she was a great one for playing cards, and she would play 500. And if anybody had time to play cards, you get into the in on the dining room table, and you played 500 with her. Many's a game. Cards we had. She was a hard taskmaster, too. She believed in things being done properly. You didn't horse around when she was in the store, and she wasn't a little lady. She, as Irma says, weighed at one time 266 pounds. But she was very light on her feet and she could move. Another thing I remember distinctly about her too, she had a dressmaker in Sarsfield, a lady by the name of Miss Doe. That house is not there. It was right beside the church, to the north side of the church. And I can remember going down there with Dad and Borden and whoever would drive her down to have her clothes made. And then I remember in later years going back to the same lady to have her clothes made smaller. Besides the store business, Grandpa had a truck that they used to deliver coal with. That was one of the main things they did. And whatever little deliveries, feed and this kind of thing that they used to have to deliver. One of the pictures that we have also is a picture of Mother, or Borden and Dad, shoveling coal over at Mrs. Newton's. Black as the ace of spades these guys were, and I don't know, one of them or both of them trying to make an impression on her. So we know exactly which one it was, even with the black etc. on his face. Coal used to be a big part of the operation, and I can remember shoveling coal too, but we would go down to the, we had to go to the station down here, come in on carloads, you shovel it off a car, onto the truck, came up, there used to be a weigh scales, actually, it would be directly in front of where that Remax for sale sign is, just to the west of the store, right in front of where a diesel tank above ground sits right now. You'd weigh it there, and then head to Mrs. Jones's house or whatever. A lot of these places would, it'd be nothing to deliver 2-3 ton of coal, and here again, it was always shoveled 3 times. A lot of these houses had maybe room for about 500 pounds, and we were expected to put a ton or two in. You'd be on your belly down there pushing this stuff back. Didn't always put you in the greatest humor. Two or three people that come to mind that helped shovel coal for years was Albert Unal was one. He's still living on the 10th line. And there was another one, was Albert Robinson. He's dead right now. He lived right across from where the NTC school is up the road. Another one was Delmer Forgy. Delmer was a real big man, and he farmed right now the north part of where Basil Stahl farms right now. If you notice, when you're going down 31 towards Carlsbad, there's a cement bridge on the left-hand side that one side of it's up this way, the other side down, up in a long laneway. That's where Delmer Forgy lived. In 1924, they get into the milk business. Milk at that time used to be taken to the station, shipped to Montreal. And some of the farmers in the area got a hold of Grandpa and thought maybe if he had this truck, he should be thinking about hauling milk into the city. And that's when that truck started in 1924. 7 days a week. Snow plowing wasn't too much at that time. The roads were no screaming, you know, whatever. So it was hard, tough work. We had to... you plowed most of the roads. We used chains all the time in the wintertime. 2 days of the year the truck didn't go, and that was Christmas and New Year's. And that was a time when you were picking up, when you did pick up Milky, well, you were picking up after supper in the evening. It was a great thing for most of the farmers in the area to offer the guy that was picking up the milk some of their home brew or whatever kind of brew they did have. We never really had anybody that was able to drink and drive. And so there were a couple of locals that used to go with Dad or Borden on Christmas Eve or New Year's Eve, and or myself. And they were supposedly going along to help with the milk pickup, but in effect they were going along just to take care of the liquid refreshments so as the driver could drive. That's as true as I'm sitting here. On numerous occasions, roads would be blocked in the wintertime, milk would be taken down to the train station, loaded onto the express cars, and I can remember about two or three times CPR people not knowing that there was going to be milk loaded, roads would be blocked, and then there could be 200 to 300 cans of milk to go on the train. There wasn't always room in the express cars, and I can remember wheeling it down the aisle of the passenger cars. Truck was always used as a means of bus or taxi operation. Also, there weren't that many people that had cars or were going to the city all the time, and it was a good way for at least two people to get a ride to town. And people would call maybe 3 or 4 days, maybe a week ahead, to see if there's anybody going on such and such a Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday. You wanted to go to town, be let off in the neighborhood of the old Union Station, which is right across from where the Chateau Laurier is right now. If there were more than two people, somebody had to ride the back, and that when you were getting a free ride, it didn't really matter as long as you got the ride. Another thing that the lads running the store, both Borden and Dad, one of their other pastimes was taking pregnant ladies into the hospital. That happened on many an occasion. I wish Mrs. Ligamat was here, because I think Dad took her a couple of times too.
I remember Borden taking Mrs. Jesse Burns when Bobby was born.
Yep. Another thing that was done with the trucks too, we did a lot of moving, and that was great fun. Throw off your cans, go and move people from one house to another. A lot of the new Canadians, as they were arriving here in the late 40s, early 50s, all their worldly belongings would come into the station down here on in a big container, and we'd go down there and open up this container, take the stuff out of it, put it in the truck, take it to their homes. That sort of came to an end when it, as bulk hauling came into place, so that part of the operation sort of went by the wayside. We started hauling bulk in 1958, so that became a little more sophisticated. We had quite a different truck and different trained drivers. Another thing that was done up here in a big way too, we used to sell seeds to market gardeners up the road. That's when you really got a chance to practice all your French. Most of these guys were French, and Borden did it for a long time, Dad did it for quite a while, and then it was my turn, so. I think it ended with me, whether that's a good sign or not, I'm not really sure. Store hours used to be a big thing, where they'd be open from 7 o'clock in the morning until 10, 11, 12 o'clock at night. I can remember people coming in on a Saturday night with maybe 30 or 40 dozen of eggs to be graded. We used to trade eggs for groceries. And this would happen on Saturday night. And it would be nothing from 10 or 11 o'clock at night doing this. After, I know that Arnold mentioned this too, but after, when we did have a fire, I'm going to come to the fire and talk a little bit about it too. Lola spent many years, working long hours. I think that's one of the first recollections that I have of split shifts too, where she'd work from whatever till wherever, and then we took shifts at noon, and somebody went home at 5 o'clock to eat, and somebody else came back at 6:30, or you came back at 6:30 and let somebody else go. In 1948, as Irma mentioned, on the 28th of August, one of the driest summers that there ever was on record, a summer that the whole building outside had been painted, and we're putting in a new floor, a new kitchen floor over at Mother's. And Percy was working for us then. Percy Smith and I were in there having our supper, and we'd taken all the old floor and put it in a barrel out behind the store and set a match to it. Had done this, that's the way you burn your garbage. Had done this on numerous occasions before, but just the conditions happened to be right. And the fire got out of the barrel into the long grass, and it just went zip into the buildings behind. And as the buildings had all been just recently painted, it just went like wildfire on the new paint job. And that started about 6:30 at night. Actually, we were just getting ready to go into, we had one of the trucks, or both the trucks, I guess, were unloaded. They didn't have any milk cans on them. We were going into Ottawa to move Denny Uno home. He had a concession at the exhibition. He used to have a food concession in there. It was a beat up thing, and it took a big truck to move this stuff home. So we were going in, we had two trucks ready to go in and do this. And this fire started, and there wasn't any firefighting equipment in the buildings at that time at all. Consequently, things moved pretty quickly, and we got the old telephone system was a great way of getting news passed around in a hurry, and you got on the phone with this long ring. And, do we have any telephone operators?
Yeah.
No. Hazel, that's right.
Oh, yes, there are operators.
No, but I just wonder if there were any here. So Hazel's the only operator we got. And you got on this thing with the long ring, and that told everybody that there was a fire, so the party lines worked overtime right about then. That night we were able to take about 90% of the groceries that were on the shelves, canned goods, etc., off the shelves into the truck. All the doors, all the furniture came out of the store, out of the house, and moved them across the road into the White House over, who's there? Hearst, where Hearst lives, Norma's, Myrna's house over there, across the road. Stayed on the veranda there for a few days, I guess. That year I had just finished school, actually, and I started to work on the 1st of July, 1948. Sort of planned on going and doing some business administration, but this was a little more important to get us back on the road again. The whole basement, etc., was dug out by horse and scoop. Frank Kenny, I guess, did most of that with his team of horses. And all the residue from the basement was taken down to Garrett Rivington's, back in Garrett Rivington's bush, and it was dumped in a hole back there that the stone came out of in 1896, 7, and 8 to build the church. That fall was a very open fall. There wasn't, actually there hadn't been any weather. And the whole building was covered in before there was any snow, and on the 3rd of December of 1948, Norman Johnson and I were shingling the roof on the west side of the building without any shirts on. 3rd of December. It just so happened that year I had Grey Cup take us through. That was the year that made Grey Cup, when the Calgary gang came to Toronto with their horses and this kind of thing, and into the Royal York Hotel. I had answered an ad in the paper that time, and I had two tickets, and Bill McFadden and I were going to go to the Grey Cup, actually, so I didn't get to that. The end of January, then, in 49, I think it was about the third week of January, we had a sort of a grand opening. We had a party. If anybody built a barn, you always had a barn dance, so we had a dance in the store. One of the worst nights of the winter. It snowed. There was freezing rain the whole bit. We had, actually we thought maybe we should cancel it, but we had music hired, and Morrison & Watt had given us a bunch of cakes, and we'd made sandwiches, etc., so there was no turning back, so we had the party. And the place was packed. I can remember Dad saying too, as we started to move into this place, he thought maybe we were a little bit crazy, because he said, you'll never fill it. You know what happens from there. had something here about Mr. Remington, too. Where is he? So, Mr. Norman Road. No, here it is. After the fire on the 28th of August, we were sort of shut down for about 7 days, that's all. The following Monday, Norman Remington and the crew got organized and they built shelves in the garage. The garage is right beside Mother's house now, those two bays there. And stocked the shelves there, and I think it was about 7 or 10 days that we were back in business in that part of the place. We had saved enough groceries or enough stuff off the shelves that got us in pretty good operation pretty quickly, but it wasn't difficult to get some more, but the stuff got all sorted out and it wasn't that much of a cost. Actually, the safe that we're using now, I can remember rolling it out of the old store. You didn't roll it on its wheels, it just went head over heels out the door. So I'm the third generation. The fourth generation of my gang, every one of them worked in the store. As soon as they were able to operate a cash register, Dad had them on a stool, and he expected them to behave in a manner befitting to what he was asked to do when he was a young lad, and made them work hard. And I think the same as any parents was harder on their kids than you would be on somebody else that was working for you. He had two or three real good rules, and one of them was you didn't put your backside on the counter, you didn't chew gum, and he expected you to balance at night. And if he had anybody hanging around, his favorite expression was, if you've got nothing to do, don't do it here. And I think I've used that quite regularly myself. He had a good sense of humor. If somebody was sitting around with not too much to do, he'd send them across the road, especially new people, if you had somebody new in to start to work. And he did it with our kids too. He'd maybe send them up to Elsie and go up and see if Elsie had any white lampblack. That was one of his favorites. Another one was, and Monica Irwin will vouch for this, he had sent her, I think, across to her BB's, or when Basil Johnson ran the store across the road, sent her over there for the left-handed monkey wrench. That was another one that he played fairly well. But the training that these kids got from Dad at the store and working locally like that has stayed with them, has really pretty good. Most of them hated to move away. Like, I remember when Joy worked the longest in the store. And when the first job that she got was with Lauren Murphy Foods at Tunney's Pasture. And she was in the canteen there. And she'd leave here at 4:30, 4 to 5 in the morning to go to work. And I can remember coming back to the store, and it was a pretty rough day. Coming in and saying to Dad, Grandpa, can I come back to work? And he said, no, you've got a job and you're going back to the job the next day. And she did, and that was in the restaurant business, and essentially that's what she's doing right now. In Dad's family, I was the oldest, Ross and Marilyn. Each one of you know them, I'm sure. Ross's, both Carl and Donnie and Johnny worked quite a bit in the store. Johnny, the latest JT, he's the fourth generation, and he's still in the food business, so he's in sales for Schneider's. Donnie's with Hewlett Park at Packard, Carl's with the government. I think, Heather, do we call her with government too, Mother? I think so.
NCC.
And then there was Marilyn, the baby of the family, spoiled brat.
Spoiled by the oldest.
No, I think being the female of the family, I think maybe she was spoiled. Married and moved to Russell, and she has two boys. One of them is with Canadian Standards Association in BC. That's Brad, the oldest one, and Kenny. He's sort of in limbo right now. Kenny's last job was with Hudson Bay Organization. It sort of passed away here a year or so ago. He's looking right now. And he's a bit of a renowned curler too. He's has almost got to Ontario Championships. Maine someday. And our four kids, everybody knows them. Joy's a dietitian in Toronto. Lauren's Got a nest downstairs teaching high school at Bell High School. Wendy's a legal secretary at home right now starting to raise a family. And Kathleen, an accomplished school teacher across the road. Joyce thinks it's great having her across the road. I'm not so sure whether she thinks it's great having us across the road. Maybe she thinks it's great. I don't know whether she's already will or not. It's hard to say. In 1965, the latest part of the operation got itself started. I was the school bus business, sort of taken on as a dare that year. And we started out in 1965 with two vehicles, of which one of which Dad drove for actually 2 or 3 years until he was 65. Yeah, I did a quick drive on that one. And that's something that he enjoyed too, and the kids enjoyed having it. And that has gone from two then to right now we operate 43 vehicles every day. The corner store and the country businesses were a very important thing at early settlers. Grocery business today, the country business, the small business doesn't resemble anything like that anymore. I guess maybe what does. The problem right now is in a small business in the country with the supermarkets that are so close to you, the choices that are so immense, the volume that's there. I think you find that the original country store business is an era that's almost gone. They talk about them with the good old days, you know, when you and I were neither.
That's right.
They're almost gone. But time marches on, things change. This year makes 90 years in this same operation. 90 continuous years in the grocery business. How many more? Big question. I don't know. That's about all I have to say, Bill. That has taken us almost from day one to date today. Actually, we're right into it. Fifth generation for us. She's a fifth generation. They aren't genuine Bradleys, I guess, but I think there's still a bit of blood there someplace. Actually, I know there is because both of these kids across the road, there's quite a bit of Irish in them too. I can tell at an early age. Did I forget anything, Mother?
Well, anyway, you told a lot of stories that you,
well,
Mother, I'm glad to hear some of them.
Oh, yeah, well.
You're glad to hear mine, though.
Oh, yes, yours was
mine. But, you know,
mine are true.
Irma said that Mother taught her. Actually, Mother taught me. Tried to.
Tried.
And she did a big job with her. She got along with the, she was able to teach the guys pretty well, but the girls, they just wouldn't listen at all.
The trouble I had with you was the biggest problem.
You sat behind me in grade 12 and poked me with a compass. Didn't you, Lauren?
I'll never tell. I don't know whether, you know, if I've forgotten anything that somebody thinks that I might have forgotten or a question that you'd like to ask about it.
Well, one thing, all the young ones left to go into your dad. I can remember Ross when he was so high delivered papers. 5 cents was the bet on the hockey matches.
Yeah.
5 cents, and they were collected. I'll tell you, your father collected too.
Oh, yes, yeah. He warned, he collected. That's right.
He paid up, but he also collected.
Yeah, that's right. It worked, it was a two-way street.
That's right. Ross still remembers that. He often said that. We used to go in.
This has been fantastic. I've certainly enjoyed listening to the Bradley history, both Irma and Lauren, and I think everybody else has too. And it's brought back a lot of memories. As Lauren mentioned about his grandmother sitting in the back doorway looking through, and many a time I've gone into the store and saw her sitting there. Let's go back a few years, Lauren.
Well, it goes back before 1948 anyway, Brian.
Yeah, right.
We'll pass these around.
I have some nice pictures to show now of
I told you about